This is Law and Disorder.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian.
And I'm Jim Lafferty, a decades-long political activist and once the national director of the National Lawyers Guild.
We're going to be doing a fundraising special. And we're going to talk about a very interesting anthology titled I Dare Say, a Gerald Horn Reader, written by Professor Gerald Horn, that I think you're going to like. As you may know, Law and Disorder is currently airing on WBAI Monday mornings at 11 a.m. It's a weekly one-hour show hosted by myself, Michael Smith, attorney Heidi Boghossian, attorneys Jim Lafferty, and Maria Hall. We'll now be having a guest host come in to bring an even wider expertise to the many topics covered on our show. We've been a weekly radio show on WBAI now for nearly 19 years. We're grateful to have been with you all this time, grateful for your support while you listen to us, while you're either traveling with or during your commutes or tuning us in at home or even at work. We appreciate your support to us and to New York City's listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI. We're going to hear from author and historian Professor Gerald Horn. We talk with him about his recent book titled I Dare Say, a Gerald Horn Reader, published just now by Orr Books. Here is some of what Orr Books has written about the anthology. Drawing on a career that spans more than four decades, this sparkling reader showcases the many highlights of Horn's writings, delving into discussions of the United States and its place on the global stage, the curation of mythology surrounding titans of 20th century African-American history, like Malcolm X, and Horn's thoughts on pressing international crises of the 21st century, including the war in Afghanistan during the early 2000s, and the war in Ukraine, which erupted in February 2022. We're offering to you for a gift to the station of a $50 pledge, the book titled, I Dare Say, a Gerald Horn Reader. That is your gift for a pledge of $50 to support this radio station, WBAI. We'll be airing parts of the interview, but I also would like to encourage you to become a WBAI buddy, if you haven't already. There are some new requirements for radio shows on WBAI. We do appreciate you tuning in to Law and Disorder each week, and by quickly signing up to be a supporter of our show as a WBAI buddy, that'll help this radio station meet its fundraising goals. Less fundraising means, well, it means you get to listen to your favorite radio show uninterrupted.
I'm attorney Jim Lafferty, one of the co-hosts of Law and Disorder. I've been co-hosting for quite some time now, and I've fallen in love with the show. I was in love with the show before I was co-hosting it, I should say. I also co-host a local show in Los Angeles called the Lawyers Guild Show. I've been doing that for about 30 years. What we're doing today, by way of saying thank you to you and hoping that you'll say thank you to us, well, we're offering Professor Gerald Horn's book as a gift to you when you pledge at the $50 level. And I have to say, that's a low level of pledge to get this wonderful book. You do it, of course, by giving us a call at 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You know, these stations aren't like other stations. We don't sell products as such. We don't advertise the latest orange juice or something. We get precious little money from the government, if at all. We don't have corporate sponsors, so we can say whatever we want to say. You know, they've done studies where they show that if you do corporate sponsors on the public radio stations, it affects what you cover because you want those sponsors to continue supporting you. If you say something too nasty about Archer Daniels Midland, you won't be getting any money from Archer Daniels Midland. We don't do that here at BAI. We don't have to do that. We really are free speech, people-owned radio, if you will. But it's not easy. It's not easy in a commercial capitalist world like this one to keep a station like this alive with that kind of purity of financing, if you will. But we're proud of it. We think you listen to it in part because you understand you're getting the unfiltered views of not only of our guests, but of our host as well. But it's a two-way street, my friends. It is really you. This really is your radio station. There's folks who work here. We have a general manager and all that. I might say they're not paid half of what they could get if they worked somewhere else, but they love this place too. So you got to give us a call. You have to kind of be with us. You've been with us for many years. It gets more and more expensive to put radio like this on the air. So please, my friends, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. As I say, then we'll send you as a gift that anthology, I dare say. There are other things. If you go on our website, you'll find other gifts as well for similar donations. You don't have to restrict yourself to that, but that's what we've been featuring you today. It's a wonderful book being offered, if you will, at a small contribution price. And your contribution to WBAI, as I say, well, it shows the management you care, and we do appreciate that. And it keeps us on the air, which we appreciate. We guess you appreciate. You know, one of the things that I think people sometimes miss about this kind of public radio station, where we're a very openly humanistic station, we have politics, we're not embarrassed by those politics, we feature the voices you don't hear from movement leaders and from left thinkers and radical thinkers that you don't hear on the commercial airwaves. So that when you contribute to this station, my friends, think about it, you're contributing to the movement. You're contributing to this broad movement for political and social change in this country that your listenership suggests you're interested in, that is vitally important to you. You know, you send some money to the ACLU or Black Lives Matter or feminist cause, and you're supporting the movement. Well, we feature all of those people on this radio station and our program, for that matter, voices you rarely hear on commercial radio. So when you contribute to us, when you give us a call now, that's a contribution to the whole broad progressive movement in and around the New York City area. And since we think that's important to you, we think this is a bargain, if you will, to give us a call at 212-209-2950. Hey, contribute $1,000, contribute $500. There are some folks, you know, who aren't working right now. Not everybody is in as great a place as everybody else is. We have this policy of, well, maybe you should give twice as much. And you're working, you're doing well. People who are listening and can't afford to contribute, no hard feelings. We just wish you well. Stay listening. But those who are doing well, think about your sisters and brothers who aren't doing as well and double the contribution you might make. Contribute, you know, a few hundred dollars and get a bunch of these books and pass them out at union halls, at your church, at your community group meeting, wherever the devil you are. And it'll help build a movement that way, too. Oh, and also we have something called the BAI Buddy for Law and Disorder. It's a BAI buddy for the whole station. And we appreciate those of you who now are supporting the station each month. That's what this buddy program is about. You do it each month. You do it in the name of Law and Disorder. And for those of you who would like to sign up, it's quick and easy. Now, here's how you do it. It can be done by simply visiting the website, which is simply give, the word give, followed by the numeral 2, WBAI.org. That's give, followed by the numeral 2, WBAI.org. What happens? Well, there's a page there. You'll be prompted to click on the BAI buddy, and next thing you know, all the options will be clear to you. You can give $15, $25, $50, $100 a month or whatever you want to do. It's a way to show your support for the Law and Disorder show and for this station that you've been listening to, in many cases, for many, many, many years. But if you just want to make a quick call and take care of it that way, or do both, a quick call, 212-209-2950.
212-209-2950, and let them know you want to become a BAI buddy, and they can get that set up for you over the phone. It's quick and very easy to do. That number is 212-209-2950. So let's go now to hear part of an interview we recently did with Professor Gerald Horn about his new book, I Dare Say. Gerald, it's good to be able to talk to you. I remember when we both were on the executive committee of the New York City chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. That was even before Heidi became the executive director of the National Lawyers Guild. And then you became the head of the National Conference of Black Lawyers. an organization which we very much admired. In any case, let me start off with our discussion with you. You're a scholar, but not a politically disengaged one. What was it that made you political? What formed your political consciousness?
Well, I would say growing up black in Jim Crow St. Louis, Missouri, I would say living in the United States and becoming aware of imperialism, particularly as it manifested in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, and of course, a healthy diet of reading.
Let's talk about your new book, I Dare Say, subtitled A Gerald Horn Reader. You write about racism, internationalism, and resistance. Could we please start by asking you to summarize your understanding of the roots of slavery, white supremacy, and settler colonialism in the U.S., and also how England went from being a minor monarchy on the fringes of Europe to a large power and sponsored colonies in the U.S. going back to the 16th century in North Carolina?
Well, fortunately, your question dovetails with my book, The Dawning of the Apocalypse. More to the point, what happens is that as Europe is expanding post-1492, you have the secession from the Catholic Church, speaking of Martin Luther and Protestantism in 1517, and then it takes London by storm by the 1530s under Henry VIII. I'm sure many of your audience know the story about him and his multiple marriages and possibilities for divorce being blocked by the Vatican. And that secession leads to a round robin of religious conflicts between Protestants and Catholics. That forms the backdrop for London's expansion into the Americas, because as the scrappy underdog, London had difficulty in standing up to the Catholic power, Spain, most importantly, which had first mover's advantage, since after all, it sponsored the freebooter Christopher Columbus. And so as I tell the story, sort of improvisationally, you saw the construction of a new monetized and militarized identity known as whiteness. That is to say, you had a kind of forced reconciliation between those who had been warring in the British Isles, English versus Irish, English versus Scots, and then that expands to incorporate those who had been warring in Europe, British versus German, German versus Pole, Pole versus Russian, Russian versus Ukrainian, Serb versus Croat, Northern Italian versus Southern Italian. And that turns out, at least insofar as the creation of the United States is concerned, it turns out to be the winning ticket, particularly given the fact that as we speak in 2024, the U.S., at least for the time being, reigns as the world's reigning superpower.
Gerald, you see the 1776 American Revolution as a settler revolt led by slaveholders. You say that characterizing the 1776 American Revolution as one for liberty, equality, and democracy is a creation myth. Why do you say that?
Well, certainly 1776 was a great leap forward for those of European descent. It was a great leap forward for settlers, more pointedly. But how could one say that it was a great leap forward for the indigenous population? How could one say it was a great leap forward for those of African descent? After all, in the late 18th century, there were thousands of enslaved Africans in what is now the United States. By 1861, there were millions. Not only that, but by the 1830s, if not before, the United States had seized control over transporting enslaved Africans to Cuba. During that same decade and shortly thereafter, they became the primary force in terms of transporting enslaved Africans to the biggest market of all, speaking of Brazil. And in any case, I think it's important to put 1776 in a wider context. That is to say, Canada was a province of London, but it did not revolt. And yet, if you look at Canada today, it has a single-payer healthcare system that the United States can only pine for. If you look at other settler revolts, such as Algeria, culminating independence in 1962, it would be difficult to say that the French settler project in Algeria was a great leap forward. Ditto for Kenya, culminating independence in 1963, that was a British colony. Or, for example, the revolt of the Afrikaners in the late 19th century in South Africa, which was squashed by the British colonialists. So we have to be more measured in our analyses of settler revolts. I mean, for example, by way of comparison, if you had a settler revolt on the West Bank, for example, against Israel, I'm not sure if there were those who would claim that that settler revolt was somehow a great leap forward for humanity. And that's the context in which we should view the United States. And particularly, as a lawyer, we should take judicial notice of the fruits of 1776, which includes rampaging across the continent into the Pacific by the 1890s, overthrowing the Hawaii Kingdom, genocidal wars in Indochina, for example, sponsoring religious zealotry in Afghanistan. The list is long.
If this settlers' revolt served to maintain slavery, as it seems to have done, why is this not widely recognized?
Well, that's a good question. However, the good news is that there is a growing scholarship that does acknowledge this. Not only my work, but you may be familiar with Tyler Stovall, a black American who rose to the top ranks of the historical profession, including president of the American Historical Association, the leading body of historians in the world. His book, White Freedom, and not only cites mine, but tracks mine. If you look at the book by the late philosopher, also of African ancestry, although Jamaican, his case, speaking of Charles Mills, The Racial Contract, he revisits the whole so-called bourgeois democratic project in very pointed terms. And of course, if you look at the recent documentary by the Haitian former Minister of Culture, Raoul Peck, speaking of exterminate all the brutes, it's a sweeping castigation of the very concept of settler colonialism with a scorching analysis of slavery and indigenous dispossession. Ishmael Reed, the paramount black intellectual of the 20th and 21st, well, at least of the 21st century, he has a play, The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda, which is a spoof and a send-up of Hamilton, the Disney-come-Broadway extravaganza, which in his telling basically is a kind of cover-up of slavery and the founding. So this idea embedded in your question is gaining traction, and I dare say that it will probably be the consensus notion sooner rather than later.
Professor Gerald Horn, you write that capitalism attained liftoff as a direct result of the plunder of the indigenous peoples and the mass enslavement of the Africans. Isn't it true that this understanding is both profound but not widely understood or accepted?
Well, that's probably an accurate perception, although, as with my previous response, you've had a number of writers over the years who have made that point. Of course, Karl Marx in the first instance, but also Walter Rodney in his book, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, which is based upon extensive research. The University of Rochester historian, Joseph Nkori, of Nigerian ancestry, wrote a book, England and the Industrial Revolution, which makes the point about how London's wealth and preeminence with the British Empire was basically based upon plunder of Africa and Africans in the first instance. So once again, the work is out there. Whether or not it becomes the consensus view is more or less a political question based upon political conditions. And given the strength of the right wing in the United States of America as we speak, it's problematic and difficult for what is perceived to be a radical analysis of capitalism to gain traction. But once again, as this century proceeds, I think that that so-called radical analysis will become the consensus viewpoint.
Hi, this is Heidi Boghossian, co-host of Law and Disorder. That was part of an interview with author and historian Gerald Horn. His recently published book, I Dare Say, compiles many of his writings. Instead of purchasing several books, you can receive a copy of I Dare Say as a gift when you pledge at the $50 level. We're also donating a box of books to WBAI so that the station can absorb the full amount of each pledge. That gives us some leverage on raising financial support for this listener-sponsored community radio station in New York City. It's much easier to do when we all act together and pledge our support. Remember, supporting us as a WBAI buddy can be a strong show of support for us here at Law and Disorder Radio and the station. That can be done by visiting give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. On that page, you'll be prompted to click on the BAI Buddy page, and you'll see to the right, the options will give you a range of monthly donations from $15, $25, $50, or $100. When you make your pledge in support of Law and Disorder, it will help keep our show on the air. And as a reminder, we've been on the air for nearly 19 years. WBAI was the first station to host us, and we consider it family. The website again is give2wbai.org. Or, if you'd rather speak with a person, a live person, to become a WBAI buddy, you can do so by calling area code 212-209-2950. Again, call 212-209-2950. Make sure to tell them you'd like to sign up as a BAI buddy for Law and Disorder Radio. Please show WBAI management that you appreciate hearing Law and Disorder every Monday morning. Remember, we've been on the air nearly two decades. If you're a regular listener, you may recall the many guests and issues that we've covered just in this past year. We're one of many voices advocating for the release of publisher and WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Recently, we brought several long-form interviews, including one exposing how the CIA had become open to discovery in a lawsuit claiming they spied on Assange's attorneys when they visited him in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. A judge denied the attempt of the CIA to dismiss that lawsuit. Another topic we've covered recently in several interviews is that of the Gaza war, really the Israeli attack on Palestinians in Gaza, and subsequent lawsuits filed against the Biden administration for failing to prevent genocide and for this government's complicity in genocide. We've also covered the case brought by South Africa in the International Court of Justice that found a plausible case to show Israel is indeed committing genocide.
That's right, Heidi. We've also recently had returning guest Flint Taylor, the attorney who's reopening the Malcolm X assassination case. Flint Taylor was among the People's Law Office lawyers in Chicago to be on that case. It's, of course, related to our gift that we'll send you, the book I Dare Say by Gerald Horn, when you donate at the $50 level. The book is nearly 300 pages and would make a lovely gift or addition to your library. That is your gift we'll send to you for a pledge of $50 to support this radio station, WBAI. We've aired one part of the interview, and we're going to hear another, but I'd like to take this moment to encourage more WBAI buddies. Why? Because it's very easy to do. First of all, most importantly, your financial support keeps our show on the air, and it gives the station the confidence in knowing you appreciate Law and Disorder broadcasting to you each Monday morning. Two ways of supporting us right now, becoming a BAI buddy and pledging at the $50 level to receive the gift of I Dare Say by Gerald Horn. Both can be done by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Simply tell them which type of support you'd like to give, and the operators will quickly put your pledge through or help you become a WBAI buddy, or both. You can support Law and Disorder right now by doing both, pledging your support at the $50 level and becoming a BAI buddy. That's 212-209-2950. If you'd like to support us through the website, that can be done by visiting give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. There at that page, you'll be prompted to click on the WBAI Buddy, and to the right, the options to give a range of monthly donations from $15, $25, $50, or $100. When you make this pledge of support for Law and Disorder, it'll be a high-leverage effort to keep our show on the air. The website again is give2wbai.org. Let's go now to hear another part of the interview with Professor Gerald Horn, author of I Dare Say.
You mentioned your earlier book, The Dawning of the Apocalypse, and excerpts of that are included in the recent I Dare Say, a Gerald Horn reader. Can you talk a bit more about the foundations of white supremacy in the American settler colony?
Well, as noted, if you look at the 1580s and what London called North Carolina, and as suggested by my previous remark, London was trying to steal a march on his Catholic Majesty in Spain, who, after all, in the 1580s was occupying Florida due south. This was difficult, however, because the Catholics, which used religion as a major marker of distinction and, in fact, nationality, to be blunt, grossly outnumbered the Protestants. And so, improvisationally, as suggested, you had London seeking to incorporate those they had been warring with, including the Irish, including the Scots, and then, as I suggested, leapfrogging into incorporating even those they had expelled at the end of the 13th century. I'm speaking of the Jewish population, which was expelled from England in 1291. But by the 1580s, a desperate London, and to be fair, also a Protestant Holland, a Protestant Dutch as well, a move to incorporate the Jewish diaspora against the interests of Spain, which, as you know, had launched the Inquisition, that is to say, convert to Catholicism or die or be tortured. And certainly what London had on offer was more pleasing and promising to the Jewish diaspora than the prospect of an Inquisition. And so this Jewish diaspora, therefore, was incorporated into this larger construction of whiteness, and despite some bumpiness along the way, including the attacks on synagogues and all the rest, it's fair to say that if you compare the experience of the Jewish diaspora in North America with the Jewish population in a good deal of Europe, there's no doubt that the United States excelled in that regard. The problem is that some of our friends on the left have looked at that comparison and have suggested that that means that the United States was a progressive project, not acknowledging or realizing that this incorporation of the Jewish diaspora in part was a response to the settlers' need for warm bodies, for labor power, for militants, for soldiers, to repress the indigenous population and to corral the Africans. I'm working on a book that'll be out in a few months that deals with Southern California. And one of the footnotes deals with the first Jewish person acknowledged under the U.S. flag in San Diego. It turns out this man was a noted Indian fighter. And I think that says it all.
Yeah, really. Gerald Horn, Malcolm X warned about both the Democrats and the Republicans, saying that both parties have sold us out. When Glenn Ford was on Law and Disorder, he spoke about the black misleadership class, a description phrase that he coined. An example he used was Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey, who takes big corporate money and supports the right-wing program of charter schools. Both Malcolm and Glenn Ford believed that the most effective path for black liberation was independent political action. Do your studies bear this out? I'm thinking of the path of W.E.B. Du Bois and Shirley Du Bois and Paul Robeson.
Well, assuredly. You may recall that W.E.B. Du Bois himself ran for the U.S. Senate from the state of New York in 1950 on a third-party ticket, doing quite well, by the way, during the midst of hysteria about the war in Korea, the Red Scare, and the Cold War. And fast forwarding to 2024, you don't have to stop with Cory Booker. You could look around in your own New York City and espy Gregory Meeks of Southeast Queens, the ranking Democrat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, not to mention Mayor Eric Adams, the Speaker-in-Waiting Hakeem Jeffries, who have been remarkably quiet with regard to castigating Israeli depredations in Gaza that are proceeding with rapid velocity as we speak. However, even before we get to that question of independent political action, we also must recommend and suggest and advocate that not only the black community, but the labor movement as well, which too had to endure the wrath of the Red Scare, should be more internationally minded, because international forces have played a historically positive and profound role in pushing the United States away from enslavement of Africans and pushing the United States away from the ravages of Jim Crow U.S. apartheid. And so if I were to make a policy recommendation, I would suggest that both labor and the black community should be sending delegations far and wide to the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to Brussels to confer with the leaders of the European Union, given the contradictions and conflicts between the EU and the U.S. that are proceeding apace, and of course, to CARICOM, their headquarters being in Georgetown, Guyana, not to mention Beijing, Tokyo, and Moscow.
Professor, the American ruling class today is in crisis. It's suffering a decline in hegemony around the world. We're in debt. In the USA, half of our people are poor, near poor, and many go hungry. The conditions of daily life for many are meager. Please talk about the objective situation here as we enter the election season.
Well, I think your comment says it all. I mean, there's a crisis of everyday living in this country. There's a crisis with regard to inflation. Part of the problem of this multifaceted, multi-pronged dilemma has to do with the weakness of the aforementioned labor movement, which is, once again, a reason why if we were to make a policy recommendation, we would stress and recommend pushing forward legislation in Congress in Washington to make it easier to organize unions, such as the PRO Act, for example, which fortunately came up at least briefly in Mr. Biden's State of the Union address when he gave a shout out to Sean Fain, the leader of the United Auto Workers Union. But this is a complex question that can only ultimately be resolved with the downtrodden, with the subalterns organizing independently and politically, as noted in our previous discussion.
This is Michael Smith. I'm here with my co-host, attorney Heidi Boghossian. We're talking with Professor Gerald Horn on Law and Disorder. Gerald, the great playwright and political thinker Bertolt Brecht wrote that to understand fascism, we must look behind it to capitalism, from whence it comes. Your thoughts on this, please.
Well, assuredly, not only Bertolt Brecht wrote movingly and provocatively about fascism, but also the late Anglo-Indian writer and Marxist, speaking of R. Palm Dutt, D-U-T-T, not to mention Georgi Dimitrov, the Bulgarian communist who stared down the fascists in Germany itself in the 1930s in the wake of the so-called Reichstag fire, where a fire was set in order to provide a rationale for squashing the left-wing forces then on the rise. Interestingly enough, fascism also was mentioned in the title of her last book, speaking of Madeleine Albright, former U.S. Secretary of State, in her book, Fascism, A Warning. I would suggest that in a country like the United States, which is based on settler colonialism, and settler colonialism being a project based upon class collaboration between and amongst the European settlers and their descendants, fascism is always a possibility. And I think that that's one of the reasons why you have had such an understandable concern about, for example, the fact that in Nashville, Tennessee, you have the rise of a neo-Nazi group called the Blood Tribe, a very blood-curdling descriptor, if I must say, And I'm speaking to you from Houston, where just a few weeks ago, you had an open demonstration by neo-Nazis sponsoring swastikas, or waving a flag with swastikas under the banner, quote, "Down with Jewish supremacy," unquote. Obviously, this is something that the Zionist lobby should attend itself to, rather than trying to squash J Street and Jewish Voice for Peace, and if not now, but that may be asking too much.
If you're just tuning in, that was an excerpt of the interview with Professor Gerald Horn. He's author of the recent book, I Dare Say, published by Orr Books. Orr Books appreciates listener-sponsored radio. And through their kindness, we're donating a box of books to WBAI. That means that your pledge at the $50 level will go a long way to support the station. Orr Books and Law & Disorder Radio both know how all of this works well together. To make that pledge of financial support right now, call 212-209-2950. We appreciate your support at the $50 level, for which we'll send you a gift, the anthology of I Dare Say by Professor Horn. That's 212-209-2950. Please show your support for Law & Disorder and for community radio. Your contribution to WBAI will show the management that you care about this type of information on the airwaves, and it will allow WBAI to continue coming into your rooms every week. We've been talking about becoming a BAI buddy for Law & Disorder. We appreciate those of you who now support the station each month in the name of Law & Disorder. And for those of you who would like to sign up, it's quick and it's easy. Becoming a BA buddy is a strong show of support for us here at Law & Disorder and also at the station. Remember, you can also call in at 212-209-2950. Become a BAI buddy and also pledge at the $50 level to receive your gift of the book, I Dare Say, by Gerald Horn. That number, again, 212-209-2950, is the one to dial for both types of financial support. Let's hear the last part of our interview with Gerald Horn. Let's talk now about what we can loosely refer to as the U.S. left. I think that would include the Democratic Socialists of America, left-wing people in the Democratic Party, non-party socialists, and even several socialist and black nationalist organizations. Why do you think the U.S. left cannot flex its muscles?
Well, part of its ideology, as noted, I'm not sure if there is a firm grasp on the history and contemporary reality that grows out of the history of the United States of America. I find it remarkable that of late, understandably, there have been the idea that the Zionist project in historic Palestine represents settler colonialism. I salute that assertion. But yet, somehow, the idea of settler colonialism in North America has not taken hold. And as noted, if you do not see the United States as a settler colonial project, you probably will not be able to recognize class collaboration, which is a major impediment with regard to the rise of the U.S. left. Speaking of which, and linking our previous discussion with this one, I'm still taken by the fact that in 1991, a scant 30-odd years ago, you had David Duke, a Nazi and a Klansman, running for governor of Louisiana, receiving about 50-plus percent of the Euro-American vote across class lines. If you look at January 6, 2021, that was a remarkable display of class collaboration. You had CEOs flying in on private jets. You had declassed elements. You had military veterans. You had cops. You had workers. You had shopkeepers. Most of whom, of course, were of European descent, if not all. And so the inability to recognize what is staring at us from the mirror, I think, is one of the major debilities, I'm afraid to say, of the U.S. left writ large.
Gerald, do you think the black community in the USA, which has historically been the most progressive sector in America, you think it's still that way?
Well, yeah, but I think it was the late DSA leader, Michael Harrington, or someone speaking of his DSA, that said it was a proud and combative organization, but being the strongest element on the left in the United States is like being the tallest skyscraper in Topeka, Kansas. No disrespect meant to Topeka, Kansas. And so, yes, the black community is probably the most progressive sector of the United States, but that's really not saying that much. I mean, given the fact of what we're facing with regard to this presidential election, I was just looking at a Newsweek article that was talking about a possible World War III and was outlining the U.S. cities that would first be bombed. I'm afraid to say that your own New York City is high on that list, so I'm not sure how you should respond. So, yes, the black community is a vanguard community, but I'm not sure how far that gets us, particularly since it's only a 13 or 14% of the community under siege perpetually, disproportionately represented on death row, disproportionately represented in the prison industrial complex, disproportionately represented with regard to skyrocketing infant mortality rates. And so that is something to salute, but it's also something to be concerned about as well.
Professor, speaking of Trump, it appears that he's leading Biden in the polls, but that he may avoid, at least up until the election, going on trial in four different venues where 91 counts of illegality have been alleged. It seems likely he'll be elected, and he may get the charges dismissed or pardon himself. With this in mind, what do you think the left, as we've described it, should be doing? And what are we facing?
Well, that brings us to the nuts and bolts of U.S. political life. I mean, intellectually, there is an understanding of the Electoral College and the role it plays in the election of the U.S. president. That is to say, the election of U.S. president, the person who gets the most votes does not necessarily prevail, as Al Gore or Hillary Rodham Clinton. It's basically 50-plus different elections. And so I'm speaking to you, as noted, from the state of Texas. Democrats have not held a statewide office in the Lone Star State in decades. And so to suggest that all the forces on the left should simply robotically and lockstep vote for Democrats, when we should be looking at this presidential race as an opportunity to, as noted, build a third force, to build an alternative political party, obviously makes eminent good sense. There are only about 10 states that are in play with regard to the November 2024 presidential election. And it does not include, for example, the Golden State, where Mr. Trump does rather poorly. But that suggests that a third-party insurgency should be high on the list of priorities of the U.S. left. And I could go down the list. Hawaii is another state, a so-called blue state, where you could speak in that same vein. Because certainly we should be concerned with this rise of Trumpism. We should be concerned by the rhetoric concerning calling immigrants, quote, animals, unquote, speaking of a, quote, bloodbath, unquote, if he does not prevail, although admittedly he was speaking of policies with regard to the auto industry. But given the fact that he's encouraged violence amongst his supporters, we should take that rhetoric very seriously. And certainly if you put it in a global context, you have to take it even more seriously. You might have seen the strength of the ultra-right in the recent Portuguese elections, Chega. And Portugal has a proud left-wing history after the overthrow of fascism in 1974. This is obviously a paramount concern, the rise of the Alternative for Germany, the AfD, in the seedbed of fascism, speaking of Berlin. The fact that in Italy, which could contest Germany in terms of being the seedbed of fascism, you already have in power Prime Minister Meloni, who comes out of a neo-fascist background. And then you have the South African elections coming up in May, where the neo-apartheid party, the Democratic Alliance, is being encouraged by Washington as we speak. And because of the fact that as a result of the retreat of Jim Crow, the black community had to throw overboard its most internationalist forces led by Paul Robeson and W.E.B. Du Bois. There has not been significant intervention by the black leadership on the question of foreign policy, which means that the South African election is basically sailing under the radar, despite the surge of this righteous neo-apartheid party. And so this is all putting wind in the sails of Mr. Trump's vessel, and that is why we need a more pointed strategy that takes advantage of the contradictions of the Electoral College in order to begin that long march towards political independence.
Gerald Horn, looking towards the future, can you identify any positive current trends?
Oh, undoubtedly. With regard to the labor movement, for example, a key constituency, pay attention to the outgrowth and aftermath of the strikes in Hollywood. The so-called below-the-line workers are negotiating with the moguls as we speak, and there might be another strike within weeks or months in Tinseltown. If you look at the aforementioned UAW job actions that led to a victory, if you look at what the Teamsters were able to do with regard to UPS, these are all significant straws in the wind. But a lot of the good news comes from overseas. With regard to the impending defeat of the Tories in London, for example, that's a significant step forward. Despite the provocative talk from President Macron in France, part of that reflects hysteria at the continuing growth of France Unbowed and the organized left in France, which actually did relatively well, particularly compared to the United States in the last French elections. So there are many positive signs.
Well, that was the last excerpt of the interview with Professor Gerald Horn, author of I Dare Say, published by OR Books. I'm attorney Jim Lafferty, one of the co-hosts of Law and Disorder. Oh, and also we have something called the BAI Buddy for Law and Disorder. That's a BAI buddy for the whole station. And we appreciate those of you who now are supporting the station each month. That's what this buddy program is about. You do it each month. You do it in the name of Law and Disorder. And for those of you who'd like to sign up, it's quick and easy. Now, here's how you do it. It can be done by simply visiting the website, which is simply give, the word give, followed by the numeral 2, WBAI.org. That's give, followed by the numeral 2, WBAI.org. What happens? Well, there's a page there. You'll be prompted to click on the BAI buddy, and next thing you know, all the options will be clear to you. You can give $15, $25, $50, $100 a month or whatever you want to do. It's a way to show your support for the Law and Disorder show and for this station that you've been listening to in many cases for many, many, many years. But if you just want to make a quick call and take care of it that way, or do both, a quick call, 212-209-2950. Today we're featuring, but there are many ways we say thank you when you contribute. We're featuring, I Dare Say, the anthology by Gerald Horn, who was our wonderful guest today, as a gift for your generous support. That's just for $50. We'll get you that as a support. So think about it. We've suggested a number of ways you contributed. You can contribute. We've suggested why that's so important. And as I say, it's often misunderstood, I think, by our listeners that when they do contribute to this station, they are supporting really pretty much the entire progressive movement in their city or town in the area of their station. These folks have no other station. They can't go on CNN. Gerald Horn hasn't been turning away offers from CBS or CNN or anybody else to come on and talk about his book, for God's sakes. The leaders that we have on from the various movements week after week and at many times a day on this station, they're not being harassed by the press and the television and everybody to come on the commercial radio and TV stations. You know that. You tune into this station so you can hear them. We are a part of the movement. Your contribution to us keeps them on the air. I can't tell you, friends, really. I can't. This is true in Los Angeles, where I host the Lawyers Guild show as well. I can't tell you how many times after we've had guests on, maybe we've talked about, in the course of talking about their work, a demonstration they have coming up in a week or a few days. or they're trying to sell bus tickets to go to a demonstration, or they're having a public meeting, or they're asking people to join them at a protest down at City of Hall about some issues. Time and time again, those guests will call us up afterwards and say, hey, you know, Jim, or hey, whoever they were interviewed by, boy, that spot you gave us on the air, we had twice as many people at that demonstration as we usually have. People heard about it. We asked, hey, how did you all show up here? Well, we heard about it on Law and Disorder. We heard about it in BAI. That's what I mean when I say this is a critical part of the movement. So to keep this station afloat, it's no secret, it's harder and harder for stations like this to stay afloat these days because, as I say, we don't get all that government money. We don't want it, really. I mean, because we know it comes with strings attached, as does the sponsorship money from the corporate oil companies and everybody else that public radio stations in general seem to take. I'm not putting those stations down. They're wonderful. The public radio media in this country is all wonderful. But it isn't what we are. This is unique. This is a people-only public radio station. This is a radio station that makes no secret of what it's about and what it wants to achieve. And at a time when neo-fascism, when a time when repressive measures, when a time where we're facing the very real possibility of a Donald Trump being president of the United States again, boy, do we need these stations more than ever, stations like us all over and all around the country. In New York, our biggest market, for goodness sakes, do we need WBAI? Well, then, that means we need you, my friends. We'd love to come and bring you these programs. We don't get paid. 90% of our programmers don't get paid. Our staff, as I said earlier, gets paid a half of what they could earn somewhere else. So it's you that we depend on. We've counted on in the past. You've never let us down in the past. We're trusting you're not going to let us down now. Give us a call, please, 212-209-2950, and pick the gift you'd like as a thank you for whatever amount of money you can afford to give us. Become a buddy. That would be really great. You can do that, as I said, by simply going to give, the word give, followed by the numeral 2, WBAI.org. Well, this is Jim Lafferty that's been haranguing you here. I hate to do that, but we sure need your help, my friends. We appreciate it when you give. We're going to continue bringing you the kind of program you have come to count on, and we're going to continue to count on you, and together make this a more powerful station than ever.
We do appreciate this strong support of our show, and we thank you very much for your emails, comments, and for your financial support.